plainly. Her voice carried on the air, and she wasn't speaking of victories.
Chapter 57.
I didn't feel the pain right away. I stared at the floor, a blurry sideways view, my cheeks still pressed to the stone, the stench of spilled ale rising up to me. Then I heard the Komazar yell for me to get up. It was mid-morning, and I had been taking a late breakfast in Sanctum Hall due to last-minute early morning fittings. Calantha and two guards were there with me when we heard sharp footsteps coming down the south corridor. The Komazar stormed in and ordered everyone else out. I tried to get my bearings, to focus on the tilting room.
"Get up! Now!"
he ordered. I pushed up from the floor, and that's when the pain hit. My skull throbbed like a giant fist was crushing it. I forced myself to stand and steadied myself against the table. The Komazar was smiling. He stepped forward, gently touched the cheek he had just struck, then hit me again. I braced myself this time and only stumbled, but my neck felt as though it were snapping in two. I faced him, squaring my shoulders, and felt something warm and wet trickle on my cheek.
"Good morning to you, too, Cher Komazar.
Did you think I wouldn't find out?"
I knew exactly what he was talking about, but I feigned confusion.
"I told you precisely what to say, and yet you told stories of dead sisters and dragons waking from sleep?"
"They liked to hear stories of their kingdom's namesake. It's what they wanted to hear," I answered. He grabbed my arm and yanked me toward him. His eyes danced with fury.
"I don't care what they want. I care about what they need to hear. I care about my orders to you. And I don't care if the gods themselves hand-delivered their words to you in golden goblets. All your drivel about listening without ears, seeing without eyes, doesn't matter. The guards laughed out every word to me, but not one mention of battles and victory. That is what matters, princess. That is all that matters."
"I beg your forgiveness, Komazar. I was carried away in the moment by the kindnesses of the people and their earnest desire for a story. I'll be sure to tell yours next time." He looked at me, his chest still heaving. He reached up and wiped my cheekbone, then rubbed the blood between his fingers.
"You'll tell Caden you tripped on the stairs. Say it."
"I tripped on the stairs."
"That's better, my little bird."
He rubbed the blood on his finger across my lower lip, and then bent to kiss me, pushing the salty taste of my own blood onto my tongue. Calantha and the guard didn't speak as they led me back to my room, but before she turned to leave, she paused to eye my face. A short while later, a basin of water with herbs floating on top was delivered to my room by a servant. The girl also brought a slice of soft, fleshy root.
"For your face," she said beneath lowered lashes, and hurried away before I could ask who sent it. But I could guess it was Calantha.
This offense had hit a little too close to home. I dipped a soft cloth in the water and dabbed it to my cheek to clean the wound. I winced at the sting. I had no mirror, but I could feel the bruise and the burning scrape from hitting the floor. I closed my eyes and held the soaked fabric to my skin. It was worth it. Every word I spoke was worth it. I couldn't leave them without some kind of knowing of their own. I saw it in their faces, weighing my words and what they might mean. I had pushed as far as I dared, for not everyone in the square had come to hear what I had to say. Some were there to report it. I had seen the Sanctum guards and the Quarter Lords not only scrutinizing me, but also watching those who had gathered to listen.
I picked up the piece of root the girl had brought and sniffed it. Thanis, was there nothing this lowly weed couldn't do? I held it to the wound and felt it soothe the throb. Across the room, my gaze landed on the wedding dress laid across Caden's trunk. It had been finished with little time to spare. Hunter's moon was tomorrow. The wedding was to begin at twilight as the moon rose over the foothills. There would be no processions, no flowers, no priests, no parties, none of the fanfare that accompanied a wedding in Morrigan. Vendon wedding traditions were simple, and witnesses were the greatest requirement. It would take place on the eastern wall walk overlooking Hawk's Pavilion. A volunteer chosen by the Komazar would tie our wrists together with a red ribbon. When we raised our tied hands before them, displaying our union, the witnesses would call back a blessing, bound by earth, bound by the heavens. And that would be it. The feast cake of dried fruits that would follow was the greatest luxury, but the simplicity didn't make the anticipation any less feverish. The hunter's moon and my extravagant red clan dress were embellishments that added to the fervor. I walked over and touched the gown, so carefully pieced together, a dress of many hands and many households. A dress of welcoming, not of goodbyes. A dress of staying, not leaving. Was this to be my end? Forever a hostage of one kingdom and despised by the others? I wondered if Vendon riders were already in Morrigan spreading the news of my ultimate betrayal to my countrymen. I pictured those who would curse me. The cabinet, the royal guard, my mother and father. I closed my eyes trying to hold back tears. But certainly not my own brothers or Pauline. A sob jumped to my throat. This wasn't the story I had written for myself. Not the story of Terravin and salty breezes and love. I crushed the fabric in my fist and held it to my face, staining the hem with the deeper red of my own blood. With Pauline's image still looming in my thoughts, a more horrible worry overtook me. No one in Morrigan would be considering my traitorous act for long, because they would either be on this side of hell scrabbling for roaches and rats to fill their bellies, or they would be dead. The Komazar's success seemed assured, unless I could somehow get word to them. Caden's promise to protect Bertie, Gwyneth, and Pauline was not enough. All of Terravin wasn't enough. There were so many more in Morrigan, and none of them deserved this end. The Komazar had mentioned one last winter. That must mean they wouldn't march until after that. When? Spring? Summer? How much time did Morrigan have? Not much more than I did. I jumped when I heard a knock at my door. I wanted no more surprises, and cautiously cracked it open. It was Calantha. "I have another towel for you," she moved aside. "And I brought this." Rafe stepped into view. Blood pooled cold at my feet. Was this a trap? "I may have only one eye," Calantha said. "But I perceive far more with one than most do with two. I've dismissed the guards at the end of the hall to see to another matter, and the council is still in session. You have 15 minutes before the guards return to their post. No more. I'll be back before then." She set the towel she had brought down on my bed and left. Rafe's eyes immediately went to my cheek, and I saw icy rage pass through them. "It wasn't Caden. He didn't touch me." "I'm all right," I pleaded. "We only have a few minutes." I didn't want to waste it on anger and accusations. Rafe and I hadn't been alone with so much as a private word in days. He swallowed his anger as if he could read my thoughts. He started to speak, but I stopped him. "Kiss me," I said. "Before you say anything else, just kiss me and hold me and tell me it was worth it, no matter what happens." He brushed the hair from my face.
"I promised you I'd get us out of this, and I will. We're going to have a long life together, Leah."
His arms slid around me, pulling me to him as if nothing could ever come between us again. And then his mouth came down on mine, gentle, hungry, the sweetest taste I had ever imagined. All my dreams held tight and alive again in one short kiss. We reluctantly stepped apart, because time was so short. Rafe spoke quickly.
"Wear your riding clothes in the morning. Say your remembrances from Blackstone Terrace. Do you know where it is?"
I nodded. Blackstone Terrace was one of many that overlooked the square, but it was rarely used because access to it was more complicated.
"Good," he said. "Say them just after first bell. By then, the council will be thick in their sessions. Stick to your routine so guards who watch from the square aren't alerted. When you leave, take the outside staircase down to the second level and go through the portal there. It's a deserted path that only a few servants use. I'll be waiting there for you with Jeb."
"But how..."
"Do you swim, Leah?"
"Swim? You mean the river?"
"Don't worry. We have a raft. You won't need to swim."
"But the river..." He explained to me why it was the only way, that the bridge was impossible to raise without a small army, and the lower river was too far away.
"Tavish has it worked out. I trust him."
"I can swim," I said, trying to calm my heart. A raft. Tomorrow morning. I didn't care if it was the craziest plan in the world. We'd be leaving before I had to marry the Komazar. He asked if there was anything I needed to take. He'd give it to Jeb now to secure on the raft, because there wouldn't be time tomorrow. I grabbed my saddlebag and stuffed a few things in it, including the ancient's books. I grabbed his arm. "But, Wraith, if things don't go as planned, if you have to leave without me, promise me you will." I could tell he was about to protest, but then he paused, chewing his lip.
"I will," he said, "if you promise to do the same."
"You're a terrible liar."
He frowned.
"And I used to be so good at it."
"You're my downfall. But you still have to promise me."
I'd never leave without him. Without me as leverage, he'd be going home to Dalbrek in pieces. He could probably already see the lie on my tongue. "I will," I answered. He sighed, and his lips grazed mine again, whispering against them. "I suppose we'll both have to get out, then." "I suppose we will," I whispered back. My body molded to his, and the seconds ticked by. All I wanted was more time with him. His lips traveled to my neck.
"It was worth it, Leah," he said. "Every mile, every day. I'd do it all again. I'd chase you across three continents if that's what it took to be with you."
I heard a small sigh, and he pulled away.
"There may be one snag in our plan, though," he said. "Grizz."
"Grizz? He seems like the least of our worries. He already covered for us once." A crease deepened between his brows as if Grizz made his head ache.
"He knows who I am, and it seems he's well acquainted with one of my men, too. When Grizz spotted him, he figured something was in the works, and he made it clear he doesn't want you to leave. He's one of the clan's people and expects you to stay here. My soldier explained he was only here to get me out, and Grizz seemed to buy it,
but he's keeping a close watch on us. I shook my head in disbelief. Let me understand this correctly. He doesn't care that Dalbrecht's soldiers are on this side of the river or about conspiracies and escape plans, just so long as he gets to keep me?
That's right. We plan on taking him out silently in his quarters if we have to, but as you may have noticed, he's a big brute. It might not be easy.
My blood simmered. Keep me. Like a boy with a frog in his pocket. No, I said. I'll take care of Grizz. Leah, he's too... I'm trusting you, Rafe. You need to trust me on this. I will handle Grizz. He opened his mouth to argue. Rafe, I said firmly. He sighed and nodded grudgingly.
Tonight in Sanctum Hall, be sure to talk about future plans. What will happen a week from now, and a month from now? Ask about the weather, anything so it looks like you expect to be here. It's not just the Komazar who misses nothing. The Ratan, the Chievdars, and especially Grizz note every word.
There was a light tap at the door. Our time was up. Your shoulder, I said. How is it healing?
Just a nick. The cook gave me a foul poultice to treat it.
He bent down and lightly kissed the cut on my cheekbone.
Look at us, he said. We're quite a pair, aren't we?
But then one kiss led to more, as if he'd forgotten he had to go. No one would recognize us, I answered. We're hardly a proper prince and princess anymore. He laughed mid-kiss and leaned back to look at me.
You were never a proper princess.
His hands cradled my face, and his smile faded.
But you're everything I want. Remember that. I love you, Leah. Not a title. And not because a piece of paper says I should. Because I do.
There was no more time for words or kisses. He grabbed my saddlebag and hurried to the door. Wait, I said. I have something else to give you. I went to the chest and took out a small sealed flask of clear liquid. It's a little something I lifted in my travels, I said. It might buy us more time. I told him exactly what to do with it. He grinned.
Not a proper princess at all.
He carefully tucked the flask into my saddlebag and left.
Chapter 58
Light flurries of snow began to whirl on the wind, but it wasn't enough to stop me. I found Grizz in the paddock with Eben and the foal. I jumped up on the railing and down into the paddock.
"What happened here?" Grizz asked,
clumsily motioning to a place on his own cheek that mirrored mine. His hair flew wild in the wind. I glared at Grizz but didn't answer. Instead, turning to Eben. "How's the training going, Eben?" I asked. Eben looked at me warily, sensing something was amiss, and not just because of my bruised and cut face.
"He's a fast learner," he answered. "He'll walk on a lead now."
Eben rubbed the horse's muzzle, and the young horse calmed at his touch. Their connection was already evident. The way of Eben, Dihara had called it. There is a knowing between them, a way of trust. Mysterious, but not magical. A way that requires a different kind of eye and ear. I reached out and stroked the star on the foal's head. Grizz shifted impatiently from foot to foot. "Have you named him yet?" I asked. Eben hesitated, glancing at Grizz. "Don't listen to the council of fools, Eben." I pressed my fist just below my ribs. "If you feel it here, then trust it." "Spirit," Eben said quietly.
I gave him the same name.
Grizz's patience was exhausted, and he motioned toward the rail.
You should be going.
I lit into him, my voice loud and sharp. I'll leave when I'm ready to leave. Do you understand?
Eben, Grizz said, leave us alone for a minute. The princess and I—
Stay, Eben. You need to hear this too, because who knows what other nonsense these fools have filled your head with. I walked up to Grizz and poked him in the chest. Let me make this perfectly clear to you. Though some might seek to make it appear otherwise, I am not a bride to be bartered away to another kingdom, nor a prize of war, nor a mouthpiece for your Komizar. I am not a chip in a card game to be mindlessly tossed into the center of the pot, nor one to be kept in the tight fist of a greedy opponent. I am a player seated at the table alongside everyone else, and from this day forward, I will play my own hand as I see fit. Do you understand me? Because the consequences could be ugly if someone thought otherwise. Eben looked at me with mouth agog, but Grizz stood there, in all his hulking, menacing mass, looking more like a chastised schoolboy than a fierce warrior. His lips twitched, and he turned to Eben.
Let's run some circles with spirit.
I saw the surprise on Eben's face that Grizz had called his horse by name. I guessed that Grizz had gotten my message. Now if he would only remember it. By the time I got back to the sanctum, the wind was howling, and the flurries had turned to driving snow that pelted my face. It was again just as Aunt Burnett had described, the cruel, burning side of snow. I kissed two fingers and lifted them to the heavens for my aunt, my brothers, and even for my parents. It wasn't so hard for me to believe anymore that snow could have such different sides. So many things did. I pulled my cloak close about me as it tried to whip free. Winter was marching in with a vengeance. There would be no remembrances on the wall this evening. Upon my return, a guard was waiting for me with a message. Wear the brown. Even with all the busyness of his council meetings, the Komizar still managed to send a message. No detail was too small or great for him to control. I knew why he chose the brown. It was the plainest of my dresses, certainly drab in his eyes, but all the better to contrast and showcase the red he'd have me wear tomorrow. I had no doubt he'd ordered the snow itself as the perfect backdrop, and surely he'd ordered the sun to shine in the morning so as not to deter the crowds. I dressed as he instructed, but there was more to put on besides the plain brown dress. I lifted Walther's baldric to my lips, the leather soft and warm against them, the ache in me as full as the day I had closed his eyes and kissed him goodbye. I put it on and pressed it against my chest. Next came the tether of bones, full and heavy with gratitude. I wore my hair loose and flowing about my shoulders. There was no need to show off the kavah tonight. By now, everyone in the sanctum knew it was there. I put on the amulet bought in the Jehendra, a ring of pounded copper that had been offered by the Arakan clan, a belt of dried thanis woven by a girl on the high plains of Montpere. The welcome of Venda came to me in so many ways, each gift heavy with hope. There was nothing I wanted more than to leave this place, to disappear with Rafe into a world of our own and pretend Venda had never existed, to pretend these last few months had never happened, to start our dream afresh, to have the better ending Rafe hoped for. I ached for home in a way I hadn't thought possible, and I knew somehow I had to get there to warn them.
but I couldn't deny a stirring in me, too. It caught me in unexpected moments, when a servant girl, ashamed, fluttered her lashes downward, when I caught a rare glimpse of Eben the child, when Ephira echoed her mother's words, the claw quick and fierce, the vine slow and steady. When a tent full of women measured, fitted, and embraced me with their clothes, and I felt the expectations sewn into them. They'll clothe their own, even if they have to piece together scraps to do it. And maybe the stirrings overtook me the most when I was with Aster. How had I come to love her in such a short time? As if on cue, she tapped on my door and entered. She had a cart and her chosen army with her, Yvette and Zakaya. They were too small to be barrow runners, but were able to earn a meal in the kitchen by doing other tasks.
"We're supposed to gather your things for you, miss, and haul them over to your new quarters. If that's all right with you, that is. But I think it has to be all right, because the Komazar ordered it, so I hope you don't mind if we fold up your clothes and put them in this here..."
Her face flooded with worry, and she rushed toward me.
"What happened to your cheek?"
I reached up, touching my cheekbone. I found it hard to lie to Aster, but she was too young to be drawn into this. "It was only a clumsy fall," I answered. She frowned as if unconvinced. "Please," I said, "go ahead and move my things. Thank you." She clucked like an old woman, and they went about their work. If all went well, I'd be in my new quarters for only one night. They gathered the belts and underclothes that Ephira had given me first, then went on to the dresses. Aster grabbed the towel on the bed that Calantha had brought, but as she lifted it, something heavy fell from it and clattered to the floor. We all sucked in quick breaths. My jeweled knife. The one I'd thought was gone forever. Calantha had had it all along. Aster, Yvette, and Zakaya gawked at the knife, took a step back, then looked at me. Even in all their innocence, they knew I shouldn't possess weapons.
"What should we do with that?" Aster asked.
I knelt hastily, scooping it up as I grabbed the towel from Aster. "It's a wedding gift from the Komazar," I said, and wrapped it up again. "He wouldn't be happy that I was so careless with it. Please don't mention this to him." I looked up at the three wide-eyed faces. "Or to anyone." They all nodded, and I shoved it into the bottom of the cart. "When you take these things to my room, please unload the knife carefully and place it under all my clothes. Can you do that?" Aster looked at me, her expression solemn. She wasn't buying any of it. None of them were. Their innocence and childhoods had been stolen long ago, like Eben's.
"Don't worry, miss," Aster said. "I'll be careful and put it in a real good place."
I started to stand, but Yvette stopped me and leaned forward to kiss my injured cheek, her little lips moist against my skin.
"It won't hurt for long, miss. Be brave."
I swallowed, trying to answer without turning into a blathering fool. "I'll try, Yvette. I'll try to be as brave as you."
Betrayed by her own, beaten and scorned, she will expose the wicked, for the dragon of many faces knows no boundaries. Song of Venda. Chapter 59. Caden.
I sat at the council table, listening, nodding, trying to add a word when I could, but once again Leah had commandeered my thoughts. With every drop of blood within me, I was certain I needed her here, that she needed to be here, but it seemed almost impossible now. I had known. I knew what he was planning, and I said nothing because it was everything I thought I wanted. The steps to justice, he called them. And I wanted justice. That's what I had called it, too. But I knew we were twisting words. It was vengeance, pure and simple. It was all that mattered. I was certain that the day I looked into my father's eyes and eased him into his last breath, my own breaths would grow fuller. That the scars I bore would miraculously disappear and be forgotten. Any price seemed worth that prize. Innocents die in war, Leah. I had said those words countless times to myself as justification, even when I learned of Greta's death. Innocents die. But now I pictured Birdie dishing out extra helpings of stew, myself dancing in the streets of Terravin with Gwyneth and Simone, and there was Pauline, as kind and gentle a girl as it was possible for any earthly being to be. They had names now. Their faces were sharp and clear, while the face of justice had grown dim. At the same time, I couldn't forget the people of Venda who had taken me in either. They had adopted me as one of their own, nourished me. I was Venden now, and I knew their need was great. We were a kingdom that struggled every day at the hands of those who showed no compassion. Didn't this land deserve some measure of justice? And the answer to that, I knew, was an undeniable yes. I won't let any harm come to them. I had made a promise to Leah I wasn't sure I could keep. The meetings were running long. Governor O'Bron was remarkably easy to sway, agreeing to double the loads from his mines in Arliston. Almost too agreeable. The other governors balked, claiming they couldn't squeeze blood from a stone. The Komazar assured them they could. "You have an agreement. How wonderful for you."
"Nothing to say, assassin?"
I looked up, and Malik smirked at me from across the table, delighting in catching me in other thoughts.
"We all have practice at squeezing blood from stone. We've done it for years. We can do it through one more winter."
His smile faded while the Komazars grew, pleased that I had pushed the cause. He nodded, our long-held understanding re-established.
Chapter 60. Pauline.
We were waiting on the fringe of the Citadel Plaza for Bryn and Regan, hanging in the shadows of the towering spruce, when a soldier galloped wildly past us. He fell from his horse at the foot of the steps, appearing half-dead. A sentry rushed to his side, and the soldier said a few words we were too far away to hear. And then he passed out. The sentry disappeared into the citadel as two guards lifted the soldier and carried him inside. A crowd began to gather as word spread of the soldier. He had been identified as being from Walther's platoon. Minutes passed, and then an hour, and there was still no sign of Bryn or Regan. By the time anyone emerged from the citadel again, the square was full. The Lord Vice-Regent came out and stood at the top of the steps, his face stricken. He smoothed back his white blonde hair as if trying to compose himself, or perhaps wishing to postpone what he had to say. His voice cracked in his first few words, but then he gathered his strength and announced that Crown Prince Walther of Morrigan was dead, along with his platoon. Butchered by the barbarians. My knees weakened, and Birdie grabbed my arm. Silence choked the crowd for a moment, and then mother after mother, sister, father, wife, brother, fell to their knees. Their anguished wails filled the air. And then the queen appeared on the steps. Thinner than I remembered, her face ashen. She walked into the crowd, and she wept with them. The vice-regent tried to offer comfort, but there was no consoling her or anyone else. Finally, I saw the brothers emerge and stop at the top of the steps. Their expressions were grim, their eyes hollow. There was no sign of the king, but then the chancellor appeared on their heels. Gwyneth and I both tugged on our hoods to be sure we were thoroughly covered. The chancellor's face wasn't stricken, but severe. He told everyone there was more bad news he had to share. News that would make their grief twice as hard to bear.
"We have news of Princess Arabella."
A hush fell, and sobs were choked back as everyone waited to hear what had become of her.
"When she shirked her duty as first daughter, she put us all in peril. And we see the fruit of that treachery with the death of Prince Walter and 32 of our finest soldiers. Now word comes that her betrayal runs even deeper. She is creating a new alliance with the enemy. It was part of her plan all along. She has forsaken us and announced her plans to marry the barbarian ruler, to become the Queen of Venda."
There was collective sucking in of breaths. Disbelief. No, it wasn't possible. But I looked at Bryn and Regan, standing like statues. They made no attempt to defend their sister or discredit the Chancellor.
"It is declared," he continued, "that from this moment forward, she is the most reviled enemy of the Kingdom of Morrigan. Her name will be stricken from all records, and if the gods should deliver her into our hands, she will be executed on sight for her crimes against the Chosen Remnant."
I couldn't breathe. It wasn't possible. Regan made eye contact with me at last, but his gaze was empty. He made no effort to show he didn't believe it. Bryn's head drooped, and he turned and walked back into the citadel. Regan followed. They were grieving for Walter. That had to be it. Surely, in their hearts, they knew it was a lie. She'd been abducted. I told them myself. I know what I saw and heard. We walked back to our inn in shocked silence. "She wouldn't do it," I finally said. "Leah would never join forces with the enemy against Morrigan. Never!"
"I know,"
Bertie said. My abdomen cramped, and I bent over, clutched myself. Bertie and Gwyneth were immediately at my sides, holding me in case I fell. "The baby's just stretching," I said, and took a deep, calming breath.
"Let's get you back to the inn," Gwyneth said. "We'll sort this out about Leah. There has to be some explanation."
The cramp eased, and I straightened. I still had 2 months to go. "Don't come early, child. I'm not ready."
"Do you need to rest?" Bertie asked. "We can stop in this tavern and get you a bite to eat."
I looked at the nearby tavern. It was tempting, but I only wanted to get back to... I froze.
"What's wrong?"
Gwyneth asked. Something caught my eye. I shook off their assistance and walked closer to the tavern, trying to get a better view through the window. I blinked, trying to refocus again and again. "He's dead." Leah had told me. I heard her words as clearly as if she were saying them to me now. She had stared at her feet, and her words had run together in a quick, nervous string. "His patrol was ambushed. The captain of the guard buried him in a distant field. His last words were of you. tell Pauline I love her. He's dead, Pauline. He's dead. He isn't coming back. But her eyes had darted away from mine time and again. Leah had lied to me. Because there he was, plain as day. Mikhail was sitting in the tavern, an ale on one knee, and a girl on the other. The world spun, and I reached out to a lantern post to steady myself. I wasn't sure what hit me harder, that Mikhail was alive and well, or that Leah, whom I had trusted like a sister, had deceived me so completely. Bertie was at my side, gripping my arm.
"Do you want to go in?"
she asked. Gwyneth was there, too, but she was looking through the window where I still stared.
"No," she said quickly. "She doesn't want to go in. Not right now."
And Gwyneth was right. I knew where to find him when I was ready. But I wasn't ready now.
Chapter 61.
The guards were escorting me down the corridor to Sanctum Hall when we heard footsteps coming our way. Hurried footsteps. Caden rounded the corner into our hallway and stopped. "Wait for her at the stairs," he said, dismissing the guards. "I need to speak to the princess." They did as they were ordered, and he pulled me into a narrow, dark passage. His eyes grazed over my cheek. "It was only a clumsy fall, Caden. Don't make more of it than it is." He reached up, gently running his thumb beneath my cheekbone. His jaw clenched. "How long are we going to go on like this, Leah? When are you going to be honest with me?" I saw the earnestness in his eyes, and I was surprised that my chest ached with wanting to tell him everything. But Rafe and I were too close to freedom now for the luxury of honesty. I still didn't know what Caden might do. His devotion to me was obvious, but his loyalty to Venda and the Komazar was proven. "I'm not hiding anything from you."
"What about the emissary? Who is he?"
It was more of an accusation than a question. I lifted my lip in revulsion. "A liar and a manipulator. That's all I know of him. I promise."
"You give me your word."
I nodded. He was appeased. I saw it in his eyes and by the relieved breath rising in his chest. He believed for now that I wasn't conspiring with the emissary, but his confidence in me was fleeting. He moved on to other suspicions.
"I know you don't love the Komazar."
"I already admitted that to you. Are we going to go through this again?"
"If you think marrying him will bring you power, you're wrong. He won't share it with you."
"We'll see."
"Damn it, Leah! You're spinning a lie. I know you are. You told me you would, and I believe you. What are you up to?"
I remained silent. He sighed.
"Don't do it. It won't go well. Trust me. You are going to be staying here."
I tried to show no response, but the way he said it made my blood stop cold in my chest. There was no anger in his tone or taunting. Just fact. He stepped away, raking his fingers through his hair, then leaned back against the opposite wall. His eyes burned with need.
"I heard your name," he explained. "It floated on the wind, whispering to me before I ever got to Taravan. And then that day on the tavern porch when you bandaged my shoulder, I saw us, Leah. Together. Here."
My mouth went dry. He didn't need to say more. With those few words, it added up.
Our time across the Camlan Tau when he seemed to sense things before they happened. My mother's own words racing back to me when I had asked her about sons having the gift. It's happened, but not to be expected. Caden had the gift. At least some small degree of it. Have you always known you had it? It's part of the reason why my father gave me away. I used it against his wife in anger. I've denied the gift ever since, but there are times. He shook his head. Like when I was coming for you. I knew it was the gift, even if I didn't want to admit it. And then I saw us. Here. My heart jumped when I thought of my own dreams of Rafe leaving me behind. They seemed to confirm what Caden thought he saw. We had to be wrong. It wasn't what I felt in my heart. And we are here, I said breathlessly. For now. Seeing us here together isn't much of a revelation. Not now. I saw us a long time from now. I had a baby in my arms. And I had a dream last night that I could fly. It doesn't mean I'll grow wings. Dreams and knowing are two different things. But sometimes it's hard to tell the difference, especially when you haven't nurtured the gift. You're as inexperienced at this as I am, Caden. True, he said, and stepped closer. But I know this with certainty. I love you, Leah. I will always love you. Remember that tomorrow when you bind your life forever to the Commissars. I love you, and I know you care for me. He turned and left, and I closed my eyes. My head pounded with my deceits and lies, because the gods helped me. I knew I shouldn't, but I cared about Caden too. Only not in the way that he so desperately wanted me to. Nothing, not even time or a gift, could change that. I saw us, Leah, together. Maybe he just wanted to see us and conjured an image in his own mind, the way I had daydreamed about one boy or another countless times back in Civica. I opened my eyes. Staring at the opposite wall. I wished that love could be simple, that it was always given and returned in the same measure, equally and at the same time, that all the planets aligned in a perfect way to dispel all doubts, that it was easy to understand and never painful. I thought of all the boys I had chased in the village, longing for some hint of affection from them, the stolen kisses, the boys I was sure I was in love with, of Charles, who led me on but ultimately had no feelings for me. And then Rafe came along. He changed everything. He consumed me in a different way, the way his eyes made everything jump inside of me when I looked into them, his laughter, temper, the way he sometimes struggled for words. The way his jaw twitched when he was angry, the thoughtful way he listened to me, his incredible restraint and resolve in the face of overwhelming odds. When I looked at him, I saw the easygoing farmer he could have been, but I also saw the soldier and prince that he was. We've had a terrible start. It doesn't mean we can't have a better ending. The way he filled me with hope. But I couldn't ignore the rocky path of love either. I thought of my parents, of Pauline, of Walther and Greta, even Calantha, and I wondered if love ever ended well. I knew only one thing with certainty. It couldn't end the way Caden hoped it would.
Chapter 62
The wind moaned through crevices and battered doors and shutters like a giant fist. "Let me in." It was the kind of storm that sounded like it would never end. "I'm here for you." This was snow. This was winter. Two fires roared in Sanctum Hall, one at either end, but cold drafts still swirled at our feet. I watched for Venda, for a reassurance that I wasn't mad, that Rafe's plan of crossing the river wasn't insanity itself. But the shadows were only shadows. Rafe sat just a few seats down from me, and we all waited for the Komazar and the Ratan to arrive. The Chievdars bellowed among themselves as usual, but the absence of the Ratan seemed to set the governors on edge. They were unusually subdued. None mentioned my cheek, but I saw them looking at it. "It was the stairs," I finally blurted out, then caught myself, repeating more quietly, "I fell on the stairs." I wanted no scenes, no words, nothing to raise the ire of the few governors who had been kind to me. Governor Fywell shot me a brief, questioning glance. The low, stifled conversations resumed. Governor Umbrose sat staring into his mug, looking slightly dejected or drunk. Was it their council meetings today that had dampened their usual revelry? And then we heard the faint echo of footsteps. I had never heard the Ratan all approaching together. There was an ominous rhythm to their steps and a chilling ring to the weapons at their sides. It wasn't that they walked in unison, but with a deliberate, demanding beat. "Never fail." That's what I heard.
"What's this?" the Komazar asked as they entered. "Has someone died?"
There was an effort to fill the quiet pall. Instead of sitting in clusters as they usually did, the Ratan spread out, dragging seats between governors. Caden sat adjacent to me, and the Komazar took his place on my left. He didn't bother with the pretense of a kiss. Other matters seemed to occupy his thoughts. He called for ale and food, and the servants began bringing platters to the table. Calantha sat at the other end of the table, almost as if she wanted to distance herself from Rafe and me. Was she already regretting her acts? Was she seeing the Komazar with the eyes of yesterday again? And, more important, would she expose her transgression? Maybe she had already removed the knife from my room. I prayed Aster had hidden it well. Only when it was time for me to go would I dare to carry it. The platter of bones was set before me for the blessing. I nearly spilled it as I lifted the heavy tray.
"Wedding jitters, princess?"
the Komazar asked. I pasted on my most serene face. "On the contrary, Cher Komazar, I'm eager for tomorrow. My fingers are only numb from the cold. I haven't yet grown accustomed to your climate." I held the bleached sacrifice over my head for what I hoped was the last time, and stared at the sooty ceiling of the ancients. In an instant, I saw the sky and stars beyond, a universe spreading wide, with a long memory. And that's when I heard the cries. Across time, thin as blood swirling in a river, I heard the cry of death, the grieving howls of mothers falling to their knees, the weeping of my own mother. They knew. The news had reached Morrigan. Their sons were gone. The grief stole my strength, and I thought my knees would buckle.
"Be done with it," the Komazar snapped impatiently under his breath. "I'm hungry."
The platter shook in my hands, and I wanted to bash it into his head. Rafe leaned forward, catching my gaze,
and I saw the strength in his eyes, the restraint, the message. Hold on, we're almost there. I said the acknowledgement of sacrifice, and when I set the tray down, I kissed two fingers and lifted them to the gods, my mother's cries still ringing in my ears. We are almost there. The rest of the meal was uneventful, for which I was grateful. Each quiet step brought us closer to tomorrow, but it was almost too quiet. Caden had hardly spoken a word of consequence through the whole meal, but as I started to push away from the table, he grabbed my hand. "What did you see, Ciara?" It was the first time he had ever called me that. The Komazar snorted, but everyone at the table waited to hear my response. "What do you mean?" I asked. "Your lashes fluttered before the blessing. You gasped. What did you see?" The truths may wish to be known, but now was not the time. Instead, I twisted lies into something golden and glorious that I knew Caden wanted to hear, something I hoped would stop him from searching for the truth. I looked at him warmly and smiled. "I saw myself, Caden. Here. Many years from now." I let my gaze linger on his for a few moments more, and though I didn't say the words aloud, I know he heard, "I saw myself here with you." Relief shone in his eyes. I forced the warmth to remain on my face for the rest of the evening, even as my lie twisted into a dark, cold knot inside of me. The Komazar walked me to my new quarters. "I think you'll find it warmer than Caden's drafty room." "His quarters were fine. Why not just leave me there?"
"Because if you're still poking your head out a south tower window after the wedding, instead of being over here with me, the clans might wonder why. We want to at least give them the appearance of a true commitment, don't we, my dove? But Caden can come visit you here in the late hours. I'm a generous man."
"So considerate of you," I answered. I had been in this tower before. It was where Wraith's chamber was located, but I had never been on this floor. The Komazar led me to a door opposite his and opened it. The only light came from a small candle that glowed on a table. The first thing I noted was the walls. They appeared to be solid. "There aren't any windows," I said.
"Of course there are, but they're small, which helps keep it warmer. And look, there's a nice large bed. Enough room for two as the need arises."
He stepped closer and gently caressed my face where he had struck it. His dark eyes glowed with power. He seemed invincible, and I wondered just how hard it would be to kill him, or if it was even possible. I heard my mother's admonition. Taking another life, even a guilty one, should never be easy. If it were, we'd be little more than animals.
"Tomorrow is our wedding day, princess," he said, and kissed my cheek. "Let's make it a fresh start."
There was no one to see this performance just now, and I wondered at his gentle peck. As soon as he left, I inspected the room. I thought the shadows would lead to something, a closet perhaps, but the small, cramped space was all there was. The four windows were little more than shuttered peek holes 6 inches across, and the whole room was barely larger than the holding cell he had thrown me into when I first arrived. The chest and bed took up most of the space. This showed a commitment and fresh start. I was more like a tool thrown into a nearby shed. I began searching through the clothes that Aster, Yvette, and Zakiya had delivered. The candle offered little light,
but as I searched every fold and pocket, I began to despair, thinking Calantha had already come and retrieved it. It wasn't here.